All right, so we got to get moving. Look at Andy putting time limits on us.
Sorry, I've got to go to the bank. I may not have a mortgage anymore. I may be able to pay my mortgage off.
You're like a senior citizen.
I will. They say,
What are you doing today? You say, ask a retired senior citizen what they're doing today, and it's and almost inevitable that the answer is going to the bank. It's like they have to go and look at their money and then come home. They don't spend any of it. They don't take it out. They just go to the bank.
They gotta go to that early bird breakfast.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Are you alright, Bill?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Good. Right. I've been texting you all week and you've just not been replying. It's like you fell out with me.
He did tell me he doesn't like you anymore.
Fair enough.
Did you text me? I mean, you were sending me messages and I told you I was a little bit busy and I haven't been able to get back to you that much. Did you send other messages?
See, he's paraphrasing. What he said to me is, fucking Andy, I'm busy, and he keeps sending me stupid.
Actually, that would be fine.
All right, we should do this because otherwise we're never going to get done today.
We should, yeah, because I do have to leave it in 3 hours' time.
That breakfast buffet ain't going to wait for him.
Dave!
You wait too long, all the bacon is soft.
The second breakfast buffet.
We have proper bacon as well, not that stringy shit.
What? Proper bacon. What do you have?
Do you have applewood bacon?
Thick, juicy rashes of bacon.
That's what I love. Mm-hmm. Crispy.
You get pigs with monocles sitting there going, oink, oink.
It's like Hitchhiker's Guide. Please eat my rump. It's very tasty and firm.
Bacon and cheese, though, they will be my downfall in life. You can almost write that in stone. When I go, it's going to be some sort of congestive heart failure because of that.
And well, Paul went out doing what he loved.
Eating bacon and cheese. Anyway.
While riding a pony.
Yeah? What was that, though?
I said, while riding a pony.
Yeah, no, that's not my favorite. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine anthology show, or whatever the hell we do. I'm Paul Spataro, joined today, as usual, by Sir Andrew Leyland.
Greetings.
The bacon eater extraordinaire. And we have with us Dr. Bill.
Well, good. I thought you were going to call me the bacon.
No, Andy's not eating you. Andy's going to teach you the proper way to eat bacon.
Oh, Andy, I would suggest my rump.
And today we are joined for the first time on the show by our buddy, Dave Weider. Welcome aboard, Dave.
Good morning. This I got a pause break.
This is purely a byproduct of Holly Weider buying Dave the complete series of DS9.
It was an anniversary present, and she was reluctant because she's like, it's on all the streaming media. I'm like, I want it physical media.
And to be fair, stuff that's on the streaming media does go away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important that you have this so you could stay with us for the next, well, we have basically after we record today, we have 3 seasons left to do.
So you're in the end zone.
Well, we are, and I'm premature because this is the penultimate episode of the 4th season that we're recording at this moment, but once we record the final episode, I feel like we're over the hump now, and it's just kind of sitting along for the downhill ride.
Well, you say that now, but just wait, because you're going to have technical problems, scheduling problems, I'm just predicting.
Well, we've been doing this now for quite some time, and we've had technical problems and scheduling problems, so I don't expect that to change. You know, we all do have our lives to lead, and I think we've done pretty well with it though so far. I think we've kept up. You know, we've been able to do our bi-weekly release schedule without a problem, so I think we're good. Anyway, what's your why don't you give us a little of your DS9 background?
DS9 was tricky because where I live
tricky. Oh, sorry.
Tricky. Don't get me started on that. they played it at 9 p.m. on Monday nights here.
That would seem like an ideal time to watch it, honestly.
You would think, but it's a school night. I was in high school through the bulk of the run. Where TNG I was able to watch because they played it on Saturday evenings and then Sunday afternoons. But it didn't immediately grab me because I remember looking at the design aesthetic. I'm like, this looks weird. It's all browns and bronzes. And it wasn't until right around what we're covering with this episode, right around the end of season 4, I'm like, oh wait, they're connecting things. Worf is there. They're doing something completely different. But even then, I was then a young adult and was not home very often. I did a lot of shift work. So it wasn't until later that I got patchy pieces of the show. I'm like, oh wow, they did a whole narrative. There was a whole storyline. Mm. And it's just now that I'm actually sitting down saying I'm going to watch it from beginning to end.
So, you're going to watch from beginning to end and middle to end at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you could stay with us as we come on. Well, actually, you don't need to stay with us except for the occasional guest appearance. You could start from the beginning and listen to our episodes as you go along.
Well, that's what I've been doing, is I'll watch two or three episodes, watch what constitutes a disc now, and then I'll listen to the Prophets episodes and get the full experience. So I'm way back in season 1 at the moment, almost finishing that up, as far as a concerted effort to watch the whole show.
Well, I think, especially if you've never done it, I think it's a well worthwhile task.
I know the overall, there's just a lot of detailed episodes. Unfortunately, one of the episodes I recently watched was Move Along Home.
Alabarang! I will not have no bad-mouthing of Move Along Home on this podcast. At least it's big, dopey fun.
Please.
That's a certain point of view, certainly.
what he says is true from a certain point of view.
But yeah, it's something where it didn't grab me the way it should have. I thought Voyager was going to be the show that did grab me. Turns out, big, big, big mistake. Where DS9 had a little bit of a rocky start, trying to get its footing, Voyager never got its footing, in my opinion.
I think, we've slogged Voyager a few times on this show, and honestly, Voyager is my least favorite of the Star Trek series. But at the end of the day, there were some episodes that were all right. It wasn't like painful to watch. It just could have been so much better. That's the criticism of it. It could have been so much better.
And somewhere, Scott Gardner is typing up an angry email as he listens to this.
Well, the problem I would say the biggest problem I have with Voyager is the casting. I think if they had done a better job of casting the roles, it would have come more to life, and I think the writing would have reflected that, and the series would have been better. So, I think they were limited because of the actors that they cast in the parts that they did. So, but as far as the concept of them being lost in another quadrant and all, I think that was not a bad idea.
No, just poorly executed overall.
And when I watch the occasional Voyager episode, it's not like, oh my god, this is torturous. It's just not as good as the other ones.
Voyager suffered for being on at the same time as Farscape.
Ooh.
I had never gotten into Farscape, so maybe that's why I don't hate Voyager as much as
you do. I don't think that was on the same time over here. I remember Voyager being on Thursday night.
Didn't Farscape start when Voyager was in mid-run?
I remember it.
It was on different. I kind of remember Voyager on Thursdays and Farscape on Friday with their Friday night lineup.
Oh, I don't think he means directly competing.
Exactly the same time.
Sorry.
I mean that they were on in the same time period, and Voyager just looked flat and boring, and Farscape looked cinematic and was completely batshit crazy.
Okay. Gotcha.
I would do a Farscape rewatch.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't. I don't go near Voyager. Sorry.
I tried to give it another chance. Like, you're just gonna break my heart. I know where this is going.
With Voyager, you're talking about?
With Voyager, yeah. Farscape was fine, especially when they came back and wrapped it up with the TV movie miniseries thing.
Yeah, yeah,
thing.
The movie was good. Yeah,
yeah.
And to be fair, you know, again, I don't. I think I'm probably the most kind to Voyager in this group, but there have been about 3 points where I thought about doing a rewatch, and I didn't get by Caretaker. So
did everybody hear that plaintive little? I like Voyager. Bill.
So when we're done with this, Bill will do his Voyager podcast. You'll need to find some co-host stuff.
Luke Jack and Eddie will be right there with.
Yeah, yeah, Scott will probably come on for that as well.
Oh, yeah, right.
Will you two shut up? And I don't mean Andy and Bill. Oh.
Dave, you may speak. Mark, Mark, Mark,
go away. Go, go. Somebody's calling you inside.
Anyway, do we have any Star Trek news?
Yeah, Dave joined the show. He got a
there you go, that'll
do. DS9, a DS9 DVD complete series, which I looked up on Amazon while we were talking, and if you go to the Two True Freaks internet page and click on the Amazon link, you can buy the complete series of DS9 for $65.73, and that's free shipping through Amazon Prime. So we
and
all,
it's unlikely that's getting the Blu-ray release. So.
We all know how much Holly spent on it, Dave's anniversary gift now.
It's not the amount. It's the love that came with it.
Absolutely.
She's gonna have to put up with me pulling out the technical manuals again.
I was gonna say that's the bigger price to her, not the financial commitment. It's the knowing that you're gonna be spending hour after hour after hour watching this and pulling out all sorts of things and getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be on to be on listen to the Prophets every once in a while.
Oh, don't think she doesn't get dragged into my Trek nerdiness. I went into the office here to grab something for her, came back out with the Star Trek Encyclopedia explaining that, hey, did you know they cut out a scene where Savick was pregnant with Spock's child?
Mm. Well, that's
the normal daily routine.
What's the thing? In the voyage home, when Kirk is talking to Savick and he asks her how she is, that's the subtext of that scene.
There was more to that.
Yeah, but that's the subtext.
Are you going to tell him was the line that was taken out? Which did confirm my suspicions in Star Trek III that Savick and Spock did the deed.
Well, they had to. He was in Kon Far.
I've never. That excuse has never worked for me.
that's been the only way.
You're not a Vulcan.
If I don't have relations with somebody in the next 2 days, I will die. See, you just give them that, and somehow they become more sympathetic to you. Others say,
you have to touch.
Others say, well, go die. Shut up and get out of here. You're annoying the hell
Terry
out of me.
Terry Farrell and Leonard... not Leonard.
Again.
Adam Nimoy. They got married on Leonard Nimoy's birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, yeah, you know, I was just thinking about that the other day. I remember we announced the engagement, and I wasn't
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we did. Like it was exclusive to the show.
We did.
Adam phoned me up, and he said, hey, Andy, I've got an exclusive for you. And I was like, hey, Adam, how you going, man? How's the Deep Space Nine documentary? Oh, it's fine, but this is more important. Me and Terry, we're getting hitched. And
oh,
like,
great. Well,
like, I didn't know you were gay. And he said, no, not that, Terry. Terry Farrell. And I'm like, all right, brilliant, man. Good news. Can we reveal that on our show? And he said, sure, Andy, that's why I'm calling you.
Okay, we'll reveal it in 3 months.
How did he not come on with us to reveal that?
Well, he was busy doing other stuff. He was busy doing Terry Farrell. Mm.
Well, good on him.
Oh, have you guys talked about the bonus scene for Discovery?
Oh, yes. No, we have not.
A bonus scene.
I'm unaware.
They have released a scene online that was cut from the final episode where Georgiou is enlisted into section 30. Is it 31?
31, yes.
Yeah. Into section 31.
Hmm. Hmm.
And they have the black badges, which explains why you saw those on the Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Confirming the existence of section 31 as way back as this.
Yeah.
But you can't prove that.
Yeah, nobody knows about it. You can't prove anything.
Who's eating peanuts in the background?
I thought he was checking their mail. Okay.
I am, yeah. I was just opening my mail.
He's looking at his bank statement.
That's right, because it doesn't affect the sound quality at all.
It's a book. Anyway.
I got a book. I have some Star Trek news. Ben has been doing, well, not a rewatch. It's a watch. He's watching The Next Generation on Netflix, so that I've told Paul this, that Ben wants to figure out where we're getting all our catchphrases and, you know, our little quotes and stuff. He's like, so what do I need to watch?
An officer and a gentleman.
So Attack of the Clones, Superman, Star Trek 2, and the outlaw Josie Wales.
Doesn't he know we've spent a lifetime gathering these stupid pieces of information?
And that's exactly what I told him. I was like, buddy, you got a long way to go, and you got to watch them multiple times. I said, he's like, well, I wanted to start watching Star Trek. I was like, good, go ahead. And then I come in, I'm like, what are you watching Next Generation for? You should be watching the original series. Oh, well, I'll go back to that. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So then I find myself, I'm sitting there with them, and I'm watching them. And then my wife comes in, and she's like, she just looks and shakes her head, and she's like, my, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Because we're both, like, sitting there.
Warn him about Code of Honor?
Code of Honor? Which one is that?
The Planet of the Black People.
Oof. I think he's already got past that.
That's very early, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like episode 2 or 3, but it's truly, truly terrible.
Isn't episode 2 the one where Wesley steps on some flowers or something?
No, that's the naked now, or the naked whatever,
yeah. Where they redid the...
Oh, that was
the
also
one
terrible.
Paul's thinking about is the planet of the nubile people.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
The porn planet.
Yeah, yes. He's in season 3 right now.
All right, so it's starting to get good now, because the first season was painful.
Yeah. I like the Arsenal of Freedom. That's a good one. I like that one.
And then I was like, yeah, soon you'll get the Chain of Command. And I went, yeah, oh, what, lights? He just looks at me. I'm like,
you'll get there.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to, you know, if he's only going to do one viewing, he's not going to do like us and, you know, make a lifetime out of it. You know, you do have to kind of clue him into when he's coming up on a key moment.
Oh, I do. I'm like, okay, yeah. So when you get to the end of season 3, that's going to be good. That's what I am Locutus aboard.
Ooh. Speaking of Star Trek news, I don't know if anybody's getting the loot crate mission crate. Mm-mm. Well, just me. Mine finally came in. There was a delay because I signed up in September. It was supposed to come out in December. There was a delay. Didn't get to me till the beginning of March. And worth the wait. Because the box that it comes in is a shuttlecraft.
Whoa!
And then the stuff inside was fantastic. There's a nice Locutus statue, which is what made me think of that. Little Enterprise, not a model, but a toy of the ship. A good T-shirt. So I'm living my best life right now.
So are you gonna make this shuttlecraft box? Are you gonna make a giant cornucopia doomsday machine? And have it fly into it in your house?
Oh, I wasn't, but now I am.
Your wife will thank me. Not.
No, she won't.
That son of a...
What's he a doctor of?
Pain. Stupidity!
Well, I do want to have more toys for the house, so I don't know. I may have to go get that. I don't have enough. Anyway, yeah, that just goes to the conversation we had before we started recording, when I mentioned that I have to get rid of some things and how easily I'm tempted to buy more.
And luckily you're surrounded by enablers.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Or not luckily, is the case, maybe.
Well, if you want to just give things away, I'm ready.
Yeah, if you're just giving stuff away, if you've got any of those little pocketbook novels, like the Spider-Man Hulk Murder Moon or anything like that, I'll have it.
Actually, I'm looking to offload some Stephen King novels. Not all of them, just...
I can get hold of them quite easily.
Well, I have, I have several bookcases of books downstairs that I do need to divest myself of. But, I have, you know, most of Stephen King's stuff from, like, the mid-70s until sometime in the 90s in hardcover. And I think I want to keep those. I don't think I'm going to divest myself of them.
Well, I was in the book club, so I've got all the Stephen King novels up until about a year ago, and I'm just like, man, I'm not even reading these things.
My daughter's reading Salem's Lot now, so if she gets into it, then at least those books will have, a second life, because she'll read and she'll blow through them quick.
I'm gonna go through and go yes, no, yes, 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 no, yes, 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 no, and then either see if somebody in our group of friends wants them or whatever. So, but anyway, this isn't the Stephen King podcast. Stay on target.
No, I was just going to mention I watched Carrie again this week, but we're not a Stephen King podcast, so we'll move on.
Okay. You watched the original Carrie.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Carrie.
Is there any other?
Yes, there was a remake.
And a sequel.
Yes.
How do you make a sequel to Carrie? Anyway, sorry.
Abby Irving is in it.
Did you watch the post-credit scene?
Yes.
That's how you make a sequel.
There you go.
So Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Yay! Nine, Body Parts.
Speaking of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Body Parts is Season 4, Episode 25, or number 97 overall.
Everyone has his time.
I'm dying!
Everyone has his price.
When you see how much your body is worth, you're going to wish you died years ago.
Going once, going twice, sold.
But if you're a Ferengi...
You're going to live!
Everyone knows...
I'm here to collect.
A contract...
What do you expect me to do? Kill myself?
...is a contract.
This bar is closed.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And it is originally aired on June 10th, 1996... It is directed by Avery Brooks. Story by Lewis.
Did he hyperventilate when he was directing?
You're missing your mark when you say that line.
I see.
Actually, I always picture him doing the jazz routine when he was talking to Captain Kirk, to William Shatner. Watching the cap is like, this guy
tinkling
is
tinkling on the piano.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shatner was totally out of his depth, though, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think any of us would be.
Yeah, probably. Avery Brooks is just going in really strange directions. Anyway, sorry, Paul.
That's okay. The story is by Louis P. DeSantis and Robert Bolivar, and a teleplay by Hans Beamer.
Hans!
This episode guest stars Mac Grodinchik as Rom, Andy Robinson as Garrick, Rosalind Chow as Keiko, Hannah Hatte as Molly, and Jeffrey Combs as Brunt. So it's got Jeffrey Combs and Andy Robinson in it. How could we go wrong with this episode?
He's Andrew J. Robinson now.
Yes, which stands for Jort.
Jort? Jort? Really? Was he on The Simpsons? We're all out of Jort license plates.
No, it's J-O-R-D-T.
Anyway, so the plot to this episode goes like this. Quark makes a trip to Ferenginar to get a physical in order to get his life insurance renewed. The physical reveals that he will die from a rare disease. In the usual Ferengi manner, he auctions off his vacuum-desiccated remains on the Ferengi Futures Exchange to raise money to pay off his debts. After being on the market for a while, he gets a buyer at 500 bars of gold-pressed latinum and sells them. A few hours later, he finds out that his medical exam was in error, and in fact, he isn't going to die. He therefore cancels the arrangements he already made to pay his debts. The next day, the buyer comes to his quarters on the station. It's Quark's old adversary, Brunt, from the Ferengi Commerce Authority. Brunt wants what he has already paid for, Quark's desiccated remains. No more and no less. Quark explains that he isn't going to die, but Brunt already knows about the incorrect medical results. Brunt does not care. He wants what he paid for. Quark thus faces the dilemma of either killing himself or breaking a contract, thereby going against the rule of acquisition number 17. A contract is a contract is a contract, but only between Ferengi. As a reference to a rose is a rose is a rose. Doing so would mean the end of Quark's business license and making him an outcast from Ferengi society. In order to honor his contract like a good Ferengi, Quark consults with Garrick and hires Garrick as an assassin to kill him. After looking at what Quark wants his death to be, Garrick decides just to leave it a secret. That night, Quark dreams about being in the Divine Treasury and seeing the first Grand Nagus, Gint, who strangely resembles his own brother, Rom, who tells him to break the contract and that the rules of acquisition he made up were for marketing purposes. Quoting them would sound bad if they were called suggestions of acquisition. The next morning, Quark tells Brunt that he's breaking his contract, announcing to everyone present. Brunt then revokes Quark's Ferengi business license and liquidates Quark's business in its entirety, seizing all of Quark's personal and family assets. To Quark's astonishment, all his close customers help him out by using his bar as a storage facility for all of the items he needs to conduct business. As a result, he is shortly back in business with no contact with any Ferengi except his brother Rom, but finding himself feeling richer in true friends he never imagined he had. So Quark is the George Bailey of
PS9. Ah, you're speaking to it.
And,
that's how a Ferengi gets his ears.
That's the main plot, but there's also a description of the subplot. While this is going on, Major Kira, Dr. Bashir, and Keiko O'Brien return to the station in a heavily damaged runabout. Fearing for his pregnant wife, Miles O'Brien rushes to the infirmary to find that, as a result of his wife's injuries, Miles' unborn son had to be transplanted into Major Kira, as it was the only way to ensure his survival. Kira has no problem with being a surrogate mother, but Keiko and Miles are at first uncomfortable with the thought of another woman carrying their child. They eventually come to terms with it and ask Kira to move in with them so that they can be closer to the child and to obsess over her and be stalkers in a very creepy kind of way.
But loving stalkers.
Loving
Andy
stalkers.
Andy want to be trans... I thought Andy wanted to be transplanted into Major Kira.
I was gonna teleport Andy into your belly and see what happened.
My belly.
Either you were gonna give birth to him or he was gonna burst out like the Kool-Aid man.
Crap.
Oh yeah.
But I enjoyed this. I loved Brunt's performance in it, and I love Garrick. The whole thing, he's going through holodeck simulations of how he's going to kill Quark, and it's, oh, you want it to be a secret, you'll never see it coming. And they never really resolved that. They never have him go back to Garrick and say, by the way, don't kill me now.
Let's hope that contract is not still on.
Well, I thought when he was choking in his sleep, for some reason in my head, the way I remembered it, that it was Garrick choking him in his sleep, and he woke up and went, no, I want to live. But I guess I totally rewrote the scene, and I was incorrect. But
I thought this episode was going to end like the movie The End, if you've ever seen it.
Yes.
Through the whole movie, Burt Reynolds thinks he's going to die of some sort of disease, and that it's going to be a painful death, so he decides to kill himself. And he meets Dom DeLuise in the asylum, and they become friends, and Dom DeLuise, throughout the movie, is trying to help him to commit suicide. And at the end, when Burt Reynolds finally decides he wants to live, you know, Dom DeLuise refuses to take the hint, and it ends with him in fast motion
chasing
Burt Reynolds along the beach with a big knife. And I just kind of pictured it ending with Garrick chasing after Quark, ready to kill him. But no, unfortunately, they didn't go for that comedy element.
Well, that's the thing. Both of the plots on this episode start out with a little bit of a tinge of comedy. And they go somewhere very heartfelt. Like, you learn who Quark is, that there is a sense of honor to him. Different from what we normally have, but he is terrified of breaking that contract. So he does have principles.
Yeah, of a sort.
Yeah, from a certain point of view, yeah.
But yeah, the subplot is interesting because that was kind of necessitated by the fact that they had just, you know, written the whole aspect of Keiko being pregnant into the show, and then shortly after found out that Nana Visitor was pregnant, and they talked about how they when doing TNG at one point Kate McFadden was pregnant, and they just did, you know, the old trick of having her behind a desk all the time or wearing a very, very loose, you know, fitting jacket or something along those lines, and they didn't want to do that with Kira because her role doesn't really lend itself to being behind a desk all the time. So they had to come up with some sort of solution for this, and since...
it was one of the writers, somebody's wife came up with this idea.
Well, since Rosalind Chow wasn't actually pregnant and Nana Visitor was, I guess, you know, it made for this opportunity to do this, but it's pretty creative that they transported the baby in. Now, how you get the proper connections or whatever, like the umbilical cord and everything going, I have no idea. It almost reeks of Spock's brain. But, you know, it's still kind of clever. I gotta give them that.
And the next year, the DS9 Christmas party had no alcohol. You're welcome. Thanks. You can thank Alexander and Nana for that.
There was no rejoicing.
Yeah, there was no rejoicing. You two got drunk at the Christmas party and got knocked up. Now we can't drink. Thanks.
Are they still an item? Or
No. They were married for, I think, till around 2000, I think. And then she's remarried to somebody else now. She's moved on.
She didn't want to be married to Ra's al Ghul. Okay. Oh, that's what he is now.
Ra's al Ghul. I really liked this one. I thought this was a great episode. I thought it was really fun. I thought all the stuff with Garrett was brilliant. I really liked Jeffrey Combs, so Brunt was brilliant. The Ferengi ones seem to get a bit of a bad reputation on the internet, and I don't know why, because most of the ones we've watched are really funny.
I think there's this false impression that they're very repetitive, but I don't think they are. I think they all have their own little storyline that's going on. I don't think they're doing the same thing over and over again, but I think people are just, for whatever reason, they've lost patience with the whole Ferengi culture, and they feel like it's been there, done that every time they bring Grand Nagus aboard.
Which is surprising because TNG did so much with the Klingon that was very repetitive.
But we all love that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was going to say, I don't find the Ferengi stuff anywhere near as dull as the Bajoran stuff.
Oh, yeah, let's have a new guy come on for Kira to fall in love with. And
bring in the next block of wood!
But, they should have learned by this point, with basically through four seasons now, they should have learned that if you're going to have, if you're going to do a Bajoran episode, bring in Louise Fletcher or don't bother doing it. Because she's what adds life to those episodes. But this isn't a Bajoran episode. This is a Ferengi episode. And it's
really?
Definitely...
I just had my whole section on Vedic Porta, the guy that killed that dude in the one where he chucked him,
Ascension.
Ascension. Yeah. Aw, man. All that work.
But I think it's a very different Ferengi episode because we don't really have... they didn't go down to Ferenginar. We didn't have Moogie in here. It's exploring. It's really exploring less of the Ferengi culture and more exploring Quark and his attitude towards things.
Devil went down to Ferenginar to find some latinum to steal.
And it's another one of those situations that we had with Worf on The Next Generation, that Quark ultimately ends up being the most Ferengi there is, and everyone else who's constantly judging him aren't proper Ferengis. They're always bending the rules and breaking the rules and making it fit to whatever they want, whereas on Next Gen, Worf ended up being the only Klingon with any honor at all.
Well, based on Ferengi culture, shouldn't it automatically call for a willingness to bend the rules if it means greater profit?
It should do, but you could argue maybe that they should be always out for themselves as part of Ferengi culture.
You would think, acting in an honorable way would almost be un-Ferengi-like. Because you're acting in an honorable way at the expense of your wealth.
Not necessarily, because if you
in this case,
for wealth, they'll come back. Theoretically.
In this instance, he's getting more money by acting honorably, even though he's going to be dead and can't enjoy it. It's just the whole concept of somebody buying someone else's desiccated remains is just like, you think about it and it's comical and ghoulish at the same time.
A little. But I was excited that the Garrick was in this episode, because it was like, oh good, I get a Garrick episode. And the scene between Garrick and Quark, where Garrick is speaking in code, I used to be a gardener, if you need something plugged, and Quark is just not picking it up, just had me laughing out loud.
Yeah, the Garrick is brilliant in this one.
I just love him throughout the entire scene. When Quark comes in and says, I want to hire you not as a tailor, as an assassin, and his entire face just changes and he looks around the room to see if anyone's bugging the room or whatever. And he's, I don't know what you're talking about. And Quark's, oh, don't give me that shit. It's Andy Robinson is brilliant, and Armin Shimerman's brilliant, and they don't put those two together enough. Because if there's any actors on this show who can play subtext, it's those two. And because they're hidden by shit tons of latex, they do so much with their eyes.
Mm-hmm. See, I think Armin Shimerman does a really, really good acting job. I don't want to make this, that I'm saying anything bad about him. But I don't think he's so much subtext. I think a lot of times he's coming right out and saying it. And his acting is great when he does it. But I don't think there's too much reading between the lines that's needed with him. With Garrick, there's reading between the lines.
I don't necessarily think that's true, because look at the way Armin Shimerman plays his scenes with Odo.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
There's a lot of unsaid stuff between Quark and Odo that is all in the acting, and it's not in the dialogue.
Well, when Quark or Armin Shimerman does things like that, it's basically when he's going against the Ferengi way of doing things. That's where his acting becomes a little bit more subtle, because his purposes become a little bit more unclear, and you have to try and figure out exactly what's going on there. But for the most part, I think his character kind of says what he's thinking, and I don't think you have to have that much subtext where everything Garrick says is probably a lie.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Every once in a while, I think he says something that just, brushes up against the truth.
Just a reinterpretation of the truth, if you will.
Yes.
a certain point of view, again.
Yep.
I genuinely loved the scene as well where they're simulating Quark's death.
Oh, that's...
And he falls flat, face down, into whatever that drivel is that he's eating. And then Quark comes in, Garrick comes in and says, we can't poison you. I can't do this. I can't do that. What do you want me to do?
You don't want to be
at
sea.
If it's poisoned.
You won't see it coming. Okay. I just love that. And then, I expected it to be, you can't do it because you can't make Garrick look foolish. But it would have been nice to see, several failed attempts on his life as things were going on. You can't get away with it.
You have Odo keep inadvertently saving Quark, and Garrick just hiding under the promenade or something, going, "Damn it!" That's a whole other episode.
But the reason you can't do that is because Garrick is supposed to be very, very efficient in his craft, so you can't really get away with doing that.
You mean tailoring?
Yes, tailoring.
Yeah. He was checking his inseam.
So if you had him too easily thwarted, then it undermines him as a character.
Yeah, if you have him like Wile E. Coyote, it doesn't play, does it?
But if maybe
I want to watch that cartoon though.
But maybe I guess if you had more time to play with, if you had another 5 minutes for this episode, you could have done something where initially he makes the mistake of hiring the wrong guy. And it's not, he eventually goes to Garrick, but first goes to the wrong guy, and that's what happens. Like, it's like a Wile E. Coyote thing, and then he realizes, oh, this guy's a buffoon. I gotta hire somebody who knows what he's doing.
Well, they could do something like, what was that episode of L.A. Law, where the guy just walked into the, into the elevator shaft. Quark's talking.
Oh, that was, what's her name, from Dr. Pulaski, walked into the elevator shaft.
Yeah, in L.A. Law.
Yeah. Quark's talking and just turns and walks into the turbo shaft.
And then the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme plays.
And then Garrick comes out from behind the corner.
So now, shifting over to the subplot again for a minute. I thought it was a pretty clever way to deal with their off-the-scene situation, as we talked about. Mm. What do you think about it on screen?
I think it was a very ingenious way to work around something that they've been presented with that isn't planned and isn't part of the script. There is nothing worse than trying to hide an actress's pregnancy, because 9 times out of 10 you can tell. I mean, this goes all the way back for me to Sybil Shepherd in Moonlighting.
were even her shoulders were pregnant because she was having twins. There was nowhere you could film Sybil Shepherd that didn't look like she was pregnant, and eventually she disappeared for most of season four. So, you know, there are bits in Next Gen where it is just laughable by how much Dr. Crusher is hidden behind that big blue coat that she normally wears. And there's little things as well, like suddenly she's wearing the communicator badge on the blue coat instead of on her uniform, so she doesn't have to open it to press the badge. So I was all for this. 9 times out of 10, if it doesn't ruin the show, I'd rather they wrote the pregnancy in.
Oh yeah, it was, I just found the thing, thanks to the suggestion of Iris Stephenbear's wife, she was the one that came up with the idea to tie it in with Keiko's fictional birth.
And it allows Kira to be as bolshy and as in your face as she always is, if she doesn't have to hide behind monitors and sit behind the console in the Defiant and stuff like that.
But I think it also leads somewhere really sweet at the end when the O'Briens bring Kira in, and Molly's calling her Aunt Nerys, and it gives her a home that she didn't have at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, it plays very nicely into this idea that over the course of the 7 years, Kira becomes a person as well. Mm-hmm. And it gives her that thing that she's never had. She's now part of a family, and she's going to have a link to this family for the rest of her life because of that. But they do mind some of the comedy of it. I love Chief O'Brien's, "Major Kira's gonna have my baby," which that was a funny line. I do think both Keiko and O'Brien went a little bit overboard with getting Kira to come and live with them. I mean, Kira's never struck me as somebody who wouldn't want her own space.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't remember how this worked out, but I expected her to reject that suggestion. I was a little surprised when they had her accept it.
Yeah, I thought she'd be very, you know. But maybe the other side of that is Kira's never been pregnant before. She doesn't know what she's letting herself in for. Maybe having somebody around to look after her most of the time when she's not at work, she probably thinks that's beneficial.
And, I mean, I guess we could get into a little bit of the psychological element of this. Kira's always been a loner out of necessity. Now she's got the first opportunity. I mean, what is she at this point? Maybe, say, 35 years old? She's got the first point in her life ever where she's got the potential to have a traditional family life, albeit in a strange way, and maybe she's desperate to get that, and you know, maybe somewhere underneath she's like pumping a fist saying yes when they ask her to stay, because she's never had this opportunity before. So I mean, I can accept that as an explanation for why, despite her normal extremely tough and loner exterior, she would be very quick to accept this.
Yeah, you know, it gives her another female friend to knock around with, because she's only really got Dax. All of her other friends and acquaintances are men.
And Dax isn't fully 100% female, because the memories are male and female.
They can still have a good laugh, because it is Dax who's been trying to get Kira to be more feminine by, you know, taking her on the holodeck and putting her in bikinis and making her dress up like a princess and all that stuff.
And for that, we all thank Dax.
That's the male part of Dax.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and putting her in that leather catsuit in the mirror unit. Oh, no, that was for the men as well. So she's got... There's that lovely bit where O'Brien's just chatting about how they he came home from work the other day, and Keiko and Kira were just chatting about him, and they shut up as soon as he went in the room. I thought that was lovely, because that's, yeah, and he feels really upset about it. I thought that was funny.
It would be weird to have that in your family life, though, where all of a sudden you have another grown woman carrying your baby living in your house with you.
Yes. And wanted her ankles massaged and demanded that you get her strawberry milkshakes from McDonald's in the middle of the night.
That would make
or from the promenade.
It would make for a very strange existence.
Just my Andy's, wife that happened to.
I was going to say, I think Andy's pulling the curtain back a bit.
Yeah.
Well, nobody told Andy to have. Nobody told Andy to have so many children.
My wife, you could even see her ankles. She get preeclampsia, and her blood pressure is shooting up through the roof, and She looked like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Woman.
And then you were like, quick, we have to have another one.
Yeah, let's knock these out. Bam, bam, bam.
Did you call it Bam Bam?
No.
You could have easily named Ben Bam Bam.
Yeah. And Pebbles.
Pebbles and Bam Bam and Dino.
Pebbles Robinson and Bam Bam Robinson.
And Dino Robinson. That sounds pretty good. Ben's name would have been Dino.
Yeah. Yes. This episode has some great dialogue. I think the writing in it is really strong. And the delving into Quark, but not just Quark, but Nog's character as well. There's that lovely scene where they say, let's have a look how much people have bid on you on Ferengi eBay. And he goes, yeah, one person's bid on me for so much money, which just happens to be how much savings you have. And Nog's lovely line about, what a coincidence!
But it's also, like, that's another sweet element, is Rom really does care about his brother. He's trying to boost his brother up. Who's, you know, and he's also, I mean, he's very torn up that he's losing his brother, but he wants his brother at least to go out with some happiness.
And despite being a Ferengi, he's willing to give up his entire life savings for his brother, which speaks volumes.
Yeah.
I would get a kick out of it if it had been called Ferengi Bay. I don't think eBay existed when they were doing
and
this.
And there's the title of the episode. Well done.
Yep.
Somehow we come up with them. So, you know what I wonder about this episode? Dave, do you know what I wonder about this episode?
No.
I wonder what Blaine would say. You haven't listened to enough episodes of Listen to the Prophets yet.
Not yet, no.
You haven't got far enough in to know that that's a regular feature on every episode now.
Oh, okay.
Blaine says, hi guys, it's the second to last episode of the season, building towards a tense finale, and you know what that means? Ferengi-centric comic relief. It's not without continuity, though. Garrick mentions here that he used to be a gardener. Keep in mind that for at least the next couple of weeks... keep that in mind for at least the next couple of weeks. Excuse me. Jeffrey Combs is always welcome, of course, even if he makes a late appearance in the episode. Even though there's a lot of comedy here, it's actually about a fairly serious topic, which will be common of even the lightest episodes coming down the road. With the ban on Ferengi business in the bar, it's going to force Rom to do something else. Remember when he started working for the Bajoran militia as an engineer during Bar Association? The writers do. There's also a lot of great stuff in the interactions between Garrick and Quark, which are hard to come by in most episodes. We finally get some good Quark material after a couple of episodes only gave him a line or two each. I may be starting to get more of a feel for Deep Space Nine than I could in broadcast, what with binging big chunks of the season at the time and thinking more analytically about them to write these emails for the podcast. But I no longer need to know which episode of the season I'm on to know that a heavily comedic Ferengi episode is going to be followed by something huge and intense. Season finale next time, guys. Blaine. So Blaine's got kind of more of an... it seems like he liked this one, but he's more of an anticipation of the next one that's got him going.
I don't disagree with him.
It's interesting because things have changed, I think, in television production. And I think it kind of started, at least that I noticed it, with The Sopranos. That a lot of these shows that have a narrative that goes through the whole season seem to make the big episode the penultimate episode of the season and then follow that up with kind of a denouement and setup for the next season.
Hmm.
That there don't seem to be as many big finale episodes as there were, you know, for seasons.
Excuse me.
I've seen that in a lot of these, like I said, these series that go on with, you know, whatever they have, 10, 12 episodes in a season, and then, you know, the 11th episode would be the big one.
Game of Thrones is a big one on that.
Yeah. Mm.
Buffy did that as well in season 4. Where they wrapped everything up at the end with the initiative, and then the final episode was just like, oh, they've all fallen asleep, let's have a dream.
Yeah, although Discovery did have a big final episode as far as resolution purposes go.
Mm.
And that's...
Have you seen that, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did you like Discovery, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, I had to put a lot of things out of my mind, because like Gene Hendricks, I can be anal retentive. Let the technology go, let the show go where it went, and then once I did that, it was a good ride.
You should read that the book that Andy and I have read.
Is it Desperate Hours?
Yeah. We can never remember. It's either Desperate Hours or Desperate Measures, or it's the one with Georgiou and
Spock.
Yes, yeah, with Pike and the Enterprise and everything. Yeah, you know what? I have not progressed at all in that next book, Andy, since we last talked.
All right, don't worry about it.
Just haven't had any. I don't know if it's because the subject matter and it's rehashing some stuff from, you know, the original series. It's just not striking a chord with me. I haven't been able to get back to it, but I've been busy too. So
I haven't even bought that second one because of that. The premise of that one just doesn't interest me. Sorry, David Mack's a good writer. I like listening to him and reading his Facebook stuff, but the premise of that one is just I don't care what Georgiou and who's the other guy, Lorca, were doing when the Cordos the Executioner stuff was going down. I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've already done our Discovery recap. I think it's time to rate body parts.
Ooh.
And
oh boy. So I think the thigh goes. Oh, I'm sorry.
The thigh bone's connected to the. Well, whatever. I think this was a solid episode. I think it was very entertaining. You know, wasn't much in the way of world building, but I think, you know, you don't always need big world building in these episodes. I think Garrick and Brunt were both brilliant in it. And I don't think, maybe we didn't spend enough time talking about Brunt and just how. Wonderfully creepy he is in this episode. Overall, I think it hit on, you know, pretty much all cylinders, and it was, you know, just really enjoyable every step of the way, and I give it a 4.0.
I'll go next. So we had a little maybe foreshadowing, maybe, I don't know, because it was, what a coincidence that the first Negus looked just like Rom. Oh, but it was just a dream. Yeah, just a dream. Just a dream. Yeah, I had a good time with this one. It went real quick. I was, I checked the time. I was like, oh, I'm just curious how much time. Not because I was bored. I just wanted to see where I was at. And I'm like, oh man, there's only 6 minutes left. Oh man, this is really flying by. And this would also pass the flick test that if I happened upon it, I would stay on it. So I'm going to give it four desiccated discs of Mountain Dew sealed Dr. Bill.
I loved it. I'm exactly the same as you, Bill. I watched this one and couldn't believe 45 minutes had gone past, in contrast to last week's episode. I really thought this one was well written. I thought it was funny. I thought it was massively played by all of the actors. It was lovely to have Garrick and Brunt in the same episode, even though they don't interact. Everything Andrew J. Robinson does is gold. So I really did like it. I will go for 4 as well.
Dave?
I'm not going to buck the trend. I thought it was a very enjoyable episode with a lot of heart, which surprised me how much it had. So I'll stick with 4. But when Bill said, was talking about how the Negus looks like Rom, I had to think, did anybody else think that this was a holodeck fake out?
Make him think it's a dream sequence. Make him think it's a dream when it's
yeah,
really
like Mission Impossible.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't think of it cheap.
He did say that it looked cheap. Oh, yeah, this is my way.
The production value for Quark's dreams have dropped.
Yeah, I think I didn't think of that, but that's kind of that. It wouldn't be bad if that had all been Rom plotting to get him to do that. But still, just the same, even in the dream sequence, it was just fun. And that's it for body parts. Do we have anything else to touch on before we worry about what we got next time?
Why are we talking about touching body parts? This got very uncomfortable.
That's just the kind of show it is, Dave.
Yeah.
Is there any email or?
We have one piece of email from Chip Mullins, so we might as well read that.
Did we not read that last time?
Did we?
yeah, the hyperventilating Cisco thing, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, we did. You're right, we did. So we do not have a piece of email. Nobody's writing in. Gene no longer loves us. Remember when he used to write to us every episode? Now I do. We only get love from Blaine now.
I am so sad.
So no, I guess the question then
now
is,
you don't have anything to do in your contract.
So the question becomes, what are we doing next time?
Next time on our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, it's the season finale, and it's all about a broken link.
The day.
You have to take me back to my people.
Of judgment.
You killed a changeling, Odin.
I had no choice.
Is at hand.
I'm the only changeling who's ever harmed another.
Odo's final hour.
If you refuse to join with us, you will die.
Has arrived.
What have you done to him?
He has been judged.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Which means the website won't open. Oh, shit! How are we going to bid on Ferengi Bay?
Well, we'll have to find a way. Goodbye, everybody.
Ta-da!
Goodbye. It's a really sweet buy it now option.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
You know, I like the cuddle. Oh, great. There's another clip for you.